The music of the Aenir. There was Eru, the one who in Arda is called Ilúvatar. And he made first the Aenir, the holy ones, that were the offspring of his thought. And they were with him before aught else was made. And he spoke to them, propounding to them themes of music, and they sang before him, and he was glad. But for a long while they sang only each alone, or but a few together, while the rest hearkened, for each comprehended only that part of the mind of Ilúvatar from which he came. And in the understanding of their brethren they grew but slowly. Yet ever as they listened, they came to a deeper understanding and increased in unison and harmony. And it came to pass that Ilúvatar called them all together and declared to them a mighty theme, unfolding to them things greater and more wonderful than he had yet revealed. And the glory of its beginning and the splendour of its end amazed the Aenir. So they bowed before Ilúvatar and were silent. Then Ilúvatar said to them, "Of the theme that I have declared to you, I will now that you make in harmony together a great music. And since I have kindled you with the flame imperishable, you will show forth your powers in adorning this theme, each with his own thoughts and devices, if you will. But I will sit and hearken and be glad that through you great beauty has awakened into song." Then the voices of the Aenir, like unto harps and lutes and pipes and trumpets and viols and organs, and like unto countless choirs singing with words, begin to fashion the theme of Ilúvatar to a great music. And a sound arose of endless interchanging melodies, woven in harmony, that passed beyond hearing into the depths and into the heights, and the places of the dwelling of Ilúvatar were filled to overflowing. And the music and the echo of the music went into the void, and it was not void. Never since then have the Aenir made any music like to this music. Although it has been said that a greater still shall be made before Ilúvatar by the choirs of the Aenir and the children of Ilúvatar after the end of days. Then the themes of Ilúvatar shall be played aright, and shall take being in the moment of their utterance, for all shall then understand fully his intent in their part, and each shall know the comprehension of each. And Ilúvatar shall give to their thoughts the secret fire, being well pleased. But now Ilúvatar sat and hearkened, and for a great while it seemed good to him, for in the music there were no flaws. But as the theme progressed, it came into the heart of Melkor to interweave matters of his own imagining that were not in accord with the theme of Ilúvatar. For he thought therein to increase the power and the glory of the part assigned to himself. To Melkor among the Aenir had been given the greatest gifts of power and knowledge, and he had a share in all the gifts of his brethren. He had gone often alone into the void places, seeking the imperishable flame, for desire grew hot within him to bring into being things of his own. And it seemed to him that Ilúvatar took no thought for the void, and he was impatient of its emptiness. Yet he found not the fire, for it is with Ilúvatar. But being alone, he had begun to conceive thoughts of his own, unlike those of his brethren. Some of these thoughts he now wove into his music, and straightway discord rose about him, and many that sang nigh him grew despondent, and their thought was disturbed, and their music faltered. But some began to attune their music to his, rather than to the thought which they had at first. Then the discord of Melkor spread ever wider, and the melodies which had been heard before were founded in a sea of turbulent sound. But Ilúvatar sat and hearkened until it seemed that about his throne there was a raging storm as of dark waters that made war one upon another in an endless wrath that would not be assuaged. Then Ilúvatar arose, and the Aenir perceived that he smiled, and he lifted up his left hand. And a new theme began amid the storm, like and unlike to the former theme, and it gathered power and had new beauty. But the discord of Melkor arose in uproar and contended with it, and again there was a war of sound more violent than before, until many of the Ainur were dismayed and sang no longer, and Melkor had the mastery. And again Ilúvatar arose, and the Ainur perceived his countenance was stern, and he lifted up his right hand, and behold, a third theme grew among the confusion, and it was unlike the others. For it seemed at first soft and sweet, a mere rippling of gentle sounds in delicate melodies, but it could not be quenched, and it took to itself power and profundity. And it seemed at last that there were two musics progressing at one time before the seat of Ilúvatar, and they were utterly at variance. The one was deep and wide and beautiful, but slow and blended with an immeasurable sorrow, from which its beauty chiefly came. The other had now achieved an unity of its own, but it was loud and vain and endlessly repeated. And it had little harmony, but rather a clamorous unison as of many trumpets braying upon a few notes. And it essayed to drown the other music by the violence of its voice. But it seemed that its most triumphant notes were taken by the other and woven into its own solemn pattern. In the midst of this strife, whereat the halls of Ilúvatar shook, and a tremor ran out into the silences yet unmoved, Ilúvatar arose a third time, and its face was terrible to behold. Then he raised up both his hands, and in one chord, deeper than the abyss, higher than the firmament, piercing as the light of the eye of Ilúvatar, the music ceased. Then Ilúvatar spoke, and he said, "Mighty are the Ainur, and mightiest among them is Melkor. But that he may know, and all the Ainur, that I am Ilúvatar, whose things that you have sung, I shall show them forth, that you may see what you have done. And you, Melkor, shall see that no theme may be played that hath not its uttermost source in me, nor can any alter the music in my despite. For he that attempteth this shall prove but my instrument in the devising of things more wonderful, which he himself hath not imagined." Then the Ainur were afraid, and they did not comprehend the words that were said to them. And Melkor was filled with shame, out of which came secret anger. But Ilúvatar arose in splendour, and he went forth from the fair regions he had made from the Ainur, and the Ainur followed him. And when they were come into the void, Ilúvatar said, "Behold your music." And he showed to them a vision, giving them sight before there was only hearing. And they saw a new world made visible before them. And it was globed amid the void, and it was sustained therein, but was not of it. And as they looked and wondered, this world began to unfold its history, and it seemed to them that it lived and grew. And when the Ainur had gazed for a while and was silent, Ilúvatar said, "Behold your music, this is your minstrelsy, and each of you shall find contained herein, amid the design that I set before you, all these things which it may seem that he himself devised or added. And you, Melkor, will discover all the secret thoughts of your mind, and you will see that they are but part of the whole and tributary of its glory." And many other things Ilúvatar spoke to the Ainur at this time. And because of their memory of his words and the knowledge that each has of the music that he himself made, the Ainur know much of what was and is and is to come, and few things are unseen by them. Yet some things there are they cannot see, neither alone nor taking counsel. For to none but himself has Ilúvatar revealed all that he has in store. And in every age there comes forth things that are new and have no foretelling, for they do not proceed from the past. And so it was that as the vision of the world was played before them, the Ainur saw it contained things which they had not thought. And they saw with amazement the coming of the children of Ilúvatar, and the habitation that was prepared for them. And they perceived that they themselves, in their labour of their music, had been busy with the preparation of this dwelling, and yet knew not it had any purpose beyond its own beauty. For the children of Ilúvatar were conceived by him alone, and they came with the third theme, and were not in the theme which Ilúvatar propounded at the beginning, and none of the Ainur had part of their making. And when they beheld them, the more deeply did they love them, being things other than themselves. Now the children of Ilúvatar are the elves and men, the firstborn and the followers. Now, this is an image of creation an image, or that if you marry that image to his direct vision of the sense of the light of the divine mediated through the angel, and the what is right at the heart of his legendarium is that the children of Ilúvatar are the elves and the human beings, and the elves are deathless and but are somehow bound into the structure of the world. The human beings are given the gift of death. He describes it as the gift of death, and they enter the world and leave the world and re-enter the world. And they contain within them the secret fire, which is the fire of creation. Now, if you contemplate the lines of the Enniwnydell, what you see within this is a sense of a co-creative cosmos. And this sense of the elves and the human beings coming together with the divine, with the Ainur, with the angels and the divine presence to create a new music, which at the end of days will happen because each knows its place and comprehends the sense of others, like a great music, a great symphony, a great choir of manifestation. And that in a certain sense the unfoldment of the universe is connected really with this sense of discovering our place and the place of each and every other. And so that vision he has of this great light and these millions of motes of specks suspended in it, each of which has their place. Now, in a way, that's really what. So this is his, if you like, this is his creation kind of vision that has this sense of the deep unity of things. And he's in a sense in this time of darkness, this time of everything going wrong, he's saying, look, this underneath this is the deep process of things. In a sense, this that I am describing to you is an extended, some would say overextended, fairy story that shows you in all manner of ways, in all kinds of ways, tales of resurrection, tales of renewal, of recovery, of escape, of consolation, and of the manifestation of eucatastrophe, of entering into the resurrected place of resurrection, where your own creative energies are seen and made manifest and are part of the living light of the whole. And contained within that vision is the figure of Melkor, that is discordance, that is resistance, that is darkness, that willfulness that wishes not to, that wishes to separate itself and to be greater than. And is a kind of refusal. In a way, the power really of that third theme, which human beings and elves are part of, is the working out really of dissonance, finding the deeper harmony within dissonance, finding the unity within separation, resolving the paradox of the one and the many, of the opposites at war. And that, in a way, is why, if you like, it's interesting that his very first kind of sense, really, when he addresses this as a very young man, is this just this line from the Anglo-Saxon poem. Again, I'll come back to it because it's, as we just finished today, it's worth just coming back to the centrality of this line. Yalla Yarendil, Engle Biotast, of a Middengard, Monim sended. O Erendil, brightest of angels, sent to men above Middle Earth, sent to show us the way, the light that brings us out of darkness. And then, as he considers, follows his path through the war years, through the death of his friends, through the destruction of the world that he knows, he becomes increasingly interested in the creation of a new fairy tale, a new mythology, a new way of connecting, that brings us into relationship with elves, with lights, with angels, with new possibilities. And in a way, that is the place then that ultimately takes us into the Hobbit, the Lord of the Rings, and the rest of the rest of the legends that come from him. And we'll finish on this, just at half five. But it's worth noticing that he's continuing all his life to work on his legendarium, and so we'll come back to that at intervals. But he's he's invigilating an exam in Oxford, which I think is a very boring job, and he certainly finds it boring. And in the midst of his boredom, he writes, "In a hole in the ground, there lived a hobbit," and he doesn't know what a hobbit is. And he says the whole story of the Hobbit arises out of him deciding to find out what is a Hobbit. The other thing that's really sort of central in any consideration of Tolkien is his interest in the magic of language, the magic of the word. And there's a profound connection really between his writings and the Gospel of St. John, not directly, not consciously. In the beginning is the word, in arche en ho logos, in the beginning is the conversation. And in this old traditions that came out of Judaism, but that you find in Genesis, yehi or, let there be light, fiat lux, let there be light. So right at the heart of his, because underneath his mythology is his creation, because he creates these coherent elvish languages that work, because he is a brilliant philologist. But the root of those languages is that they are sacred. They are looking at sacred conversations. And looking at that sense of the name of God that is spoken, that so when we speak Yud He Shin Vav He, we bring the blessing of the divine into the world. When we say in the beginning is the conversation, in ho to logos, in avke, in the beginning, and the beginning is now, there is the living conversation that ripples beyond our particularity into all the circles of the world. And in a sense, really, I'm going to look more at Tolkien tomorrow, and we're going to look at him over the next 2 years. But the thing that I suppose, the films are lovely and they're fun, but they trivialise something that has very deep roots. So if you can consider for a moment the idea that the Gospel of St. John and the Lord of the Rings are profoundly interlinked. but in no obvious way. And the Gospel of St. John in itself is profoundly linked back to Genesis. Then what we're looking at is the work of creation. In Hebrew called Masea Beriah, the work of creation, the bringing of the light into flesh. And then stories about hobbits have a different connotation. So there we are. Let's, That's the first bit of the Silmarillion. First part. Yes, absolutely. Horus absolutely is the sort of he's the child who avenges the murder of Osiris. He's the winged being. You know, he's the protector of the Pharaoh. He has that sense of the rising up. He's also, and you know, you see him sometimes in Coptic art as this kind of figure who protects Christ on the cross. Find the Horus Hawk sitting on the cross with Christ sheltering him with his wings. And so he absolutely represents that energy of resurrection. Okay, good. Well, elves, I can't remember, there's been so many conversations, but basically elves really are different from angels. So if you like, the angels are the formative energies of the world. They are the messages of the divine light. Elves are like the beings of Anuvin. They're the kind of, if you like, they are the counterpart and co-workers with human beings. But because they're in Anuvin, they're more likely to be in touch with, because they're living in the subtle worlds. They help us to connect to that subtle world. Their bodies are more fluid. Their ability, you know, there's a whole tradition here around. So if we consider Tolkien's elven thing, there's a whole description really of what they are and what he means by them. But if we step away from Tolkien for a moment, they really are the sense that the world, we share the world with invisible beings that are in a sense held in the subtle aspect of the world and haven't entered fully into incarnation, but are our companions in our unfolding of the journey of the world, in a way. Yes, and have their own lives in relationship to that as well. Right, so they're not just there to assist us, they have their own journeys, their own place, their own understanding. But and some of them will assist us, and some of them won't assist us. You know, so and some of them don't like human beings. You know, there's a whole kind of spectrum, as with all things, in a way. Okie dokie. So let's finish for now. I'll see you all tomorrow at 10 o'clock. And we'll see what the new day has to bring us all. Have a nice evening. Lovely supper. Take care. Bye-bye.